This is episode 4 of the Wildlife Herd podcast titled, It's a Wrap. This week we have a guest host as we discuss the 2023-24 upland season. Come and join us.
This podcast was a mess.
Welcome back to the Wildlife Herd podcast. Today we don't have Jessica here with us. I've got a special guest, my husband Travis. And we're going to talk a little bit about our quail season, or I guess our upland season hunting, the wrap up from this year. We've had a lot of new experiences, and so we figured we'd kind of walk through that a little bit, see what we've learned and what we hope to do in the future. Welcome, Travis.
Hey, thank you. This should be interesting. And you people can't see it, but I make this chair look a lot better with me in it than Jess in it.
So this year we started our upland season a little bit different. Started mid-October in Idaho and tried out a little bit of grouse hunting for the first time. Our goal was to get spruce grouse, hopefully, since we were up in the northern part of Idaho. But unfortunately, we did not achieve that goal, but we did get, I got my first dusky grouse.
Yep, he was a nice, mature dusky grouse. He was a consolation prize.
Yep, we'll take him. Again, that's a new species for me, so that was exciting, and it was a beautiful area. We didn't get to take our dogs this time. We were up there doing some bear hunting and some other things, so this was kind of an extra little side hunt and was a new learning experience. Like I said, a lot of walking instead of just working the dogs.
Yep, a lot of walking uphill, both ways.
Yes, for flatland South Georgia folks, that was quite the challenge. More than the hunting itself. And then mid-November started our bobwhite season here in South Georgia. And this year we have a new puppy that we were working with.
We do. And she came along really well.
So we have now 4 GSPs. One older female, one kind of mid-aged young male who came on really strong last year. He's how old now?
He's now 2. And we have one velociraptor.
Yeah, she's in the velociraptor stage for certain, but she came on pretty quickly. I guess she's now, what, not quite a year old.
She's not quite a year. She's like 11 months. Yep.
So it was entertaining. We did get her out a little bit, getting her used to some wild birds and hunting with the rest of the crew, getting used to traveling. So that was entertaining. The quail season started out a little bit better this year, I think, than last year. Wasn't quite as hot and dry.
No, we had a really, really cool winter, you know, about contradicting the seems like parts of the other country, we were very cool this year. I would say we were really below average, at least average or below a touch.
Yeah, I think so, at least for the last few years. Quail numbers across the state were average and up in most areas. So it's started out to be a pretty good season. We were able to find a couple of cubbies most days. Shooting wasn't always the best, but we found birds. Then what, woodcock season, I guess, came in?
Yes, woodcock came in middle December to late January.
So
not quite the end.
This year, woodcock was a little bit better than last year.
Yes.
Actually found some birds this year.
That's right. We had a lot more flushes this year. We found only a handful last year, the whole season. This year, we averaged probably, I don't know, 4 or 5. Which isn't great, but yeah. But it's a lot better than last year.
Yeah, there was a few days where you found 10 plus flushes on some, so that was exciting. The dogs really enjoy that.
And our nephew got his first woodcock.
That's right. Got to take the kids out. I was drawn for a quota hunt. My nephew was drawn for the same day on a quota hunt, so the whole crew got to go out. My daughter and nephew both got to shoot at some wild birds, and then his first woodcock, so that was fun. See them, a few snipe hanging around some of the areas we'd hunting. I think you got a snipe. I never could connect with one.
Yeah, they're very hit and miss, at least in this part of the state, you know, where we're at. They're very hit and miss. They're there some days, and the next day they'll be gone and push through. So kind of like the woodcock.
Yeah.
You just kind of look into them.
Just kind of bonus birds for us down here. But we don't see them very often, so it was pretty neat little treat to be able to get couple of extra birds in the bag. Quail hunting throughout most of the December, still pretty good weather, find a decent number of birds. couple of our normal spots. As food and weather changes, you'll sometimes see those birds move into different areas. So we were having to learn some new spots and adjust to as the birds and pressure, a lot of pressure on these public land birds, especially the last few years. So that kind of changed up some of our hunting tactics.
Yeah, it seems to be, you know, a lot of people, wherever we've gone this year, we've really bumped into the people all across the country, which is, you know, it's good. There's a lot of people out with dogs, a lot of people hunting birds. But, you know, it makes you, you have to find new areas, change areas. It's, so it's a, you know, it's a double-edged sword, but we made it work.
Yep. So up to what, the end of Christmas, primarily we were bobwhite. A few, of course, trying to hit woodcock when we could, since it's a small season or short season here, and the occasional snipe. So how many coveys do you think we found up till Christmas?
Oh, wow. I can tell you, because I have a handy, dandy little journal right here that I was just looking through. We can talk about that. We started keeping a journal, you know, this year.
Yeah. That was something we'd wanted to do for a while, so I picked up a nice little journal from our friends in South Carolina. There's South Carolina DNR, I think, was the ones who put that out. And I encourage anybody who hasn't journaled and isn't keeping track of that to do so, because that's pretty neat. What you found, the weather conditions, locations, any little tips and things that you do each day. It's fun to go back through and look and see how your season went, things that you've learned throughout the season. And we kind of kept a scorecard for the dogs as well.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's pretty neat. Like I said, it's South Carolina. You know, we used it in Georgia, but it's, you know, pocket size, I guess. And it's got a spot for the date. It's got a spot for your county, number of hours, coveys flushed, quail killed, average covey size, woodcock flushed, woodcock killed, you know, and some comment sections. And we kept up with all that, the hours, the time, and, you know, made comments like Dallas missed again, you know, Dallas shot her first scaled quail. We'll get to that. And kept up with the temperatures. You know, hey, it was 20 degrees, 30 degrees. I like to keep up with wind. You know, what the wind was doing, what the humidity was like, were the dogs struggling that day, did the dogs work well that day. And we like to look at the crops in the birds and just kind of keep an idea of what they're eating, and you can see that change throughout the season. So, you know, if you're struggling next year, I can go back and say, hey, you know, we were finding them on this food source at this time of year, and you know, it gives you a spot to go look at. But to answer your question, it looks like we'd killed or, you know, pointed just over 20 coveys at that point.
Yep.
Is where we were at. Or, sorry, I mean 15 coveys, counting them wrong.
Yeah. So that was up to about Christmas or end of December, going 1 to 2 times a week normally, whenever we could get an opportunity to catch an afternoon or catch a day off here or there and get the birds out, I mean the dogs out. And obviously not as much time out in the field as we'd like, but you have to work to pay the bills sometimes. So then after Christmas, actually the day after Christmas, we took our second trip to Arizona. Something we'd been planning all summer, getting ready for since, pretty much started getting ready since we came back 2 years ago from our first trip out. And we learned a lot the first time around and learned a lot more this time.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2+ days of travel, driving out with three of the dogs.
And it was not near as daunting this time, you know, after we've done it the first time. It's like anybody else, you were a little hesitant, to, right. Not sure right. What to expect and what you're getting into. And so this time we were a little more prepared and a little, you know, ready for what we had to do.
Yeah, because last time was the first time we had traveled overnight with the dogs. So mm-hmm. That in itself was the biggest part of the learning experience there. We learned what we needed, where we needed to stay, how we needed to stop along the way. I think we were able to pare down all the supplies that we took this time, because that was something that was a big learning curve. You never know what all you're going to need, so it's better to have it than not have it. So we were able to consolidate some things a lot better this time, and kind of had to since we had the third dog in the truck this time. But 2.5 days out, we got half-day hunting. First day out, we found a covey of scaled quail, which was a new flush for us. And I think we were kind of amazed that, oh, that's scaled quail, and both of us were kind of just watched them for a minute before we decided to shoot.
Neither one of us really had a shot, because we were just mesmerized that we found them. Like Dallas said, the first couple hours out, we found a decent covey, and it was perfect lighting. You could see. I mean, neither one of us had ever flushed scalies before, but when they flew, you could see the markings on them and knew immediately what it was. And they were like, "Huh? Why didn't we shoot?"
The dogs were excited. When we hunted the first time in Arizona, we started with Merns, and the dogs busted through the first covey, which is kind of what we expected this time. It was a new species, something they have not really dealt with before. So we were kind of really surprised that there were birds there and that they hadn't bust through them. I think that was part of the kind of shock, too. That there's birds, and the dogs didn't run through them the first time. So
yeah, we never hunted desert quail. That was new. And you know, most of ours are done. We're in, you know, the southeast, and there's pine trees. And so when you go and you dump dogs out in that arid landscape, and it's grass and, you know, some few cacti and that kind of stuff, some other, you know, shrubby stuff. Yeah, yuccas. And they're kind of in a shock there for a little while.
Yep, gullies and BLM land. So there's always cows around, and that's something we have to watch. Dogs pointing cows or trying to figure out what cows are. So that was an entertaining learning experience for us and them. So we thought the week was off to a great start. So it was a few hours into it, we already had our first point, and then it was downhill from there for a few days.
It was. We got humbled real quick.
We did. It was quite sad. Everyone was talking about lots of gambles around. For those who aren't familiar with Arizona, we were out looking for what they call the Arizona Slam this time. And that's your gambles, your merns, and your scaled quail. So that's the three main species. They also have a few bob whites in a few small area. But those three are the ones that they consider their slam. So that's what we were looking for. And gambles, from what people say, are supposed to be everywhere. And this past year, people were talking about the numbers of gambles. And so we thought that was going to be our easy one, and turned out to be our hardest. I think scaled are supposed to be one of the hard, kind of in between, and then merns were supposed to be the hardest, if you talk to a lot of these guys that hunt. Because merns are really located only in one little small pocket in the bottom part of Arizona. So we hunted, another day and a half?
Probably close to that, yeah.
And zilch. Going by for some reports where people have been seeing birds, looking for the landscape that everybody said this is where you need to look for birds. Hunted hard for several days and coming up with big zeros. Getting very frustrated. The dogs were frustrated and tired. And so one evening we'd stopped by the Dollar General of all places. There's Dollar Generals everywhere. And ran into a gentleman who actually guided out that way. Asked us if we were having any luck. And we had actually offered to hire him to take us out to kind of get us some started and get us some ideas of where to go. But he was busy, and then graciously gave us a point to go check out where he had seen gambles the evening before. For those who may not hunt very often, if somebody's giving you a point, actual coordinates on a point, that's pretty special. Mm-hmm. Went out that next morning, eager to find birds, and hunted and hunted and hunted.
Yep, we hunted until after lunch, not anything. No sign of a bird.
So, again, really frustrated. Start doubting ourselves and the dogs, which, you know, never doubt your dogs. And it was okay, we're going to back up. We're going to go down to where we had found merns 2 years before. And let's just see what we can find. So we drive down and let the dogs out. And within, 10 minutes, we've shot a merns?
10, 15 minutes, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we just basically parked, walked across the road, and one of our dogs, she got really birdie. And then both dogs locked up on point. And then a nice harvest of a mern. So energized everyone again and took a little break. Went back to that point since they had seen the gambles in the afternoon. So we thought, well, maybe they've come down the hills or they've moved around. We'll try it again that afternoon. And we go in and hunting. The dogs get birdie several times and finally go on point. I think we're running three dogs this time.
Yeah, we had put three out. We ran two at Merns because we ran three that morning, and they were, you know, the older dog was tired. I will add, you know, Merns numbers were down this year, so it wasn't our intent to go shoot a lot of Merns, but we were struggling, and everybody needed a recharge. Yeah. So if we could, you know, bump into some quick, you did, and we did. We both shot one, and, you know, that was the end of Merns hunting for the trip.
That's all we cared to do, was just kind of get the dogs and ourselves energized, kind of get that confidence back. And again,
and sometimes you got to do that. Get some confidence. You need something good to happen, and, you know, get everybody back on the same page and get recharged. Yep.
You know, if you hunt, you have your own dogs, you know that, you know, as soon as you harvest something, they're all excited and energized again, and it seems to really pick up the hunt a little bit. So
Yep. So anyway, back to the story. We went back in that same area, and you know, we're looking around because it was getting later in the day. It was on, you know, mid afternoon. Like, we're gonna hunt for an hour or so, and then we're gonna go, you know, get something to eat. Yeah. we did harvest a bird. Maybe we're gonna reward ourselves with a steak or something. So yeah, we had three dogs back. All three of the dogs were back on the ground, and we were expecting gambles. You know, of course, it's like out there, like anything else. Of course, we're gonna get into the sun. You know, sun setting in the west, and the older dog went on point. The other dogs actually honored. Well, good dog work, and then, you know, nothing there. The older dogs released. They crept up, what, 50 yards or so?
Yeah,
and they did it again.
Just creep, creep, creep. Okay, yep. We thought we were going to shoot, and then, nope, we're going to move ahead again. Yep. Which, some of those western birds, that's what people say, is they're going to run on you.
Yep.
Gambles, and they'll kind of split off into singles, and then you kind of get to the end of the line, you finally flush a bird. So that's kind of what we were thinking we were getting into.
Yeah, so we were thinking, you know, gambles the whole time, and maybe something's running. You know, maybe they'll peel off, and finally, Bert dog locked down again, and we walked up, and, you know, covey of quail got up, or two or three got up, I guess, and Dallas shot one. You could see it. You could see it in the sun. You could tell it was, but you could see, because we were shooting dead into the sun, you could see little black silhouettes, and yep. She knocked down one. I whiffed completely. I'll admit it. I'll say it. And so, you know, as we were standing there, kind of like, okay, we're excited. We reloaded, and the dogs pointed, as we were looking for that, kind of pointed to the right, and, you know, another handful of birds got up. I don't know, 6 to 8 or something like that.
Yep.
And I don't know if you shot or not. I shot and somehow knocked down a double on that with the two shots.
Yeah.
And, you know, we thought we were going to pick up gambles. So we walked over there, and one of the dogs found one and brought it back. And I walked up and found one, you know, that fell by itself. They didn't see, and walked over. And as soon as I saw it, I knew what it was. It was a scaly. You know, you could see it on it. And just amazing how intricate the detail is on those birds.
Right.
And was like super excited find that bird and finally get one. It was really neat.
Yeah, it was kind of a shock at first because, again, we were expecting gambles. And then I had marked my bird, and the dogs went immediately over that way, or one of the dogs did, because the other two came, and then when those birds flushed that you shot at. And so we started hunting that bird and hunted and hunted and hunted. And we knew, we saw that bird fold and crash to the ground, so we knew I'd hit that bird. Could not find that bird. And the dogs kept being birdie. Promise, she's pretty good at finding down birds. She just stayed on it. All of a sudden, she locked into a tiny little clump of grass.
Just a little clump of grass, yeah.
Like, there's nothing there. And she went burrowing into it. And that bird had burrowed up underneath that grass. We'd have never found it without her.
We'd have never found it without a dog.
So it was, at this point.
We went from just beat down, ready to go home, to on cloud nine, you know. And like, oh, wow.
Yeah. So we're all excited. Even the old dog, she's up and ready to go again. And so we walked around, I guess, for a little bit longer to see if we could find that gamble, since that was what the point was supposed to be for. No luck there. Headed back for our celebratory dinner that evening and to rest the dogs.
That's right. Yeah, we shot those couple times in the covey, and, you know, we moved on that covey. We let it go and be up, you know, be alone. We didn't try to hunt down all the singles. And we went and, like Dallas said, tried to find another covey of some gambles. And like, hey, we could get the Arizona Slam in one day now.
I know it.
And, you know, yeah, we went and had us a nice steak dinner and celebrated. And went to bed on cloud nine that night.
Yep.
You know, kind of, you know, sit down at night and get the dogs cleaned up and patched up. And
yeah. And that was, you know, something a lot of people ask is how do your dog's feet hold up? Because that's one thing, people will boot dogs out there, have a lot of problems. And the first year we were out, we hunted, 4 or 5 days?
Mm-hmm.
No problems whatsoever. It was probably towards that last evening when we checked everybody, they were starting to get some wear around the edges of their pads. That year we only hunted Merns because we were getting into them really well and just enjoying ourselves. But this year we were hunting a little bit different habitat, a lot more rocky stuff. There was some cactus, just sandier, some inclines a little different mm-hmm. than what we had before. And our older dog, second day, that two and a half days in,
yeah,
maybe?
Probably, yeah.
She started having some splits in her pads, so we rested her for a couple of days. That was after that day, I think.
Yep.
And so she rested for a few days while we healed up her feet, and then she also had some digestive issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave her an extra day to get over that. The other two, we kept watching those, rubbing everybody down each evening with a Musher Secret and making sure everybody was patched up and healed up each day. And it wasn't until, what, like the fourth day we started putting boots on the front feet?
Yeah, the last day and a half we tried to run them with some boots. Yeah.
We hunted about 6 days, if you count the two halves on each end. And
it was just their front feet, you know, at the end. Yep. It was really where they were, you know, going down, or I guess bracing themselves, going up and down slopes or putting pressure.
So a little bit of a, starting to be a little split on one or two pads, and then basically just some rough, raw areas. Yep. And so I wanted to make sure that they could keep going and didn't have any problems and make it any worse. So we did boot them up. It was quite entertaining because they do not like wearing boots. Don't normally have to do that around here. But that gave us some extra days. And then we hunted for, what, another day and a half with pretty much no luck. And the last full day that we were going to be hunting, went back to some spots where people had been seeing birds. We had reports of birds. We hunted from early that morning, I think. And it was perfect weather the whole week.
Oh, yeah,
nice, cold, not too cold. Beautiful weather. Hunted hard and ran into some guys who were leaving and had found some gambles a few days before. Big covey. It was probably 30 birds or so in that covey. Told us where they were way back off, down lots and lots of gates. So if you've never hunted out in Arizona, BLM land, it's a lot of open and closed gates, open and closed gates. Yep. Every type of gate imaginable. I started taking photos of gates and different types of gate latches because it got to be entertaining. So we drove back in, and the guys told us that they had found them on a steep slope, had flushed them down the hill, and were able to get the dogs on them. So we hunted all around the water source that was there, which a lot of the birds in Arizona are going to hold around what they call tanks. So water sources out that way. And nothing, worked our way up the hill, nothing, back out around. And we were like, well, giving up on this, we'll go somewhere else. And started hearing birds calling. Gambles have a pretty distinctive little call. And we could hear them chattering away as they worked their way across the very top. We hadn't quite gone far enough, because I'm not exactly excited about climbing to the tip top of loose gravel.
Yep.
And so we had not gone all the way to the top. The dogs had run pretty close. Yep. We could hear them. So I think you took Bandit, our younger dog, and went up. And Promise and I walked along the bottom edge, hoping that y'all were going to flush them down to us. And I could hear them chattering as y'all walked across the top edge. And then all of a sudden, I see about 15 birds fly horizontally down the cliff line. And then I think you didn't see those.
Nope, I could hear them, but we didn't see them. We were in some, it was essentially a cliff, just a rocky cliff with a scree on it. And there was, I guess, cedar and some other shrubby bushes, maybe a few oak trees mixed in. And it was really thick. It ran surprisingly for what you'd always, you know, hear about with gambles.
Yep.
Yeah, we didn't see them, but we heard them flush.
Yeah. And then a second group of that, another little bunch of that group got up. So another 15. So there were close to 30 birds in there, plus or minus, and they went, again, the same way, right down, horizontally down the line. So both dogs saw the birds were there, sent them both back up the hill to see if they could flush some birds back down. I think one flushed back that you kind of whiffed a shot at.
Yep. Yeah, I missed a couple over there. I couldn't hit them in that stuff.
I was kind of halfway, kind of up the hill trying to stand and find a spot. If one did come by, I could shoot.
Yep.
When one come flying by my head, not able to get a shot at that one, and then look up and the dogs are knocking rocks down on me as he's sliding down the hill. And it was just like, cause this is like hunting chuckers at this point, not gambles.
Yeah. It was worse than any area we've hunted Merns in. And Merns are, you know, yeah, they're supposed to be the ones we're climbing up hills. And yeah, it was worse than anything we'd hunted Merns in.
Yeah. It was very steep. And at this point I was kind of concerned that we were going to break a leg on one of the dogs and somebody was going to get hurt. Cause it was just, like you said, scree and steep, steep, loose rocks. Those birds, they beat us.
Yep, they won.
But we did know we got into gambles, so that was exciting that we did actually see them. I mean, you could tell right away when they flushed. Loaded back up, tried a few other spots. I think we went back to our original gambles point that we were given, tried that a little bit. Never could connect with those gambles. And went home to pack the head out the next day with plans to hunt in a different area on the way home. And the gentleman who had given us the original gambles point where we found our scaled sent me another point towards Tombstone area. So it was kind of on the way home. And we said, well, we'll go try that. That'll be our last spot. We had a few other spots along the way we wanted to look at. And I think we did a little onyx scouting and some Google Earth scouting and all kinds of things, trying to pick some points, and we kind of just stopped along the way, and this looks like habitat. Let's throw a dog out, see what happens.
Yeah, but remember that morning, you know, the people we were staying at,
that's right,
the rental or whatever the house, you know, he had done some a lot of dove hunting in an area close by, and he had gave you, said, hey, go try this area. We see them when we're dove hunting. We hunted for, 3 hours or more, three and a half, and up and down that wash. And
yeah, because it
never bumped a bird.
It was near an area we had thought would be good. We hunted actually across the highway.
Yeah, we hunted right across the highway from it.
And ran into a lot of guys hunting javelina. Mm-hmm. A lot of javelina hunters in the area. We didn't see a lot of quail hunters. Did see a few. But coos deer, javelina, those guys they're out everywhere. Mm-hmm. Ran up lots and lots of jackrabbits.
Yeah, any of you rabbit hunters out there? Yeah,
that is the rabbit place. If I hadn't wanted to not teach the dogs to chase rabbits, I'd have been shooting some jackrabbits. But we had hunted a few days before across, and so he said, well, we thought that looked like Gamble's habitat, so we'll go try that. And we tried that, I think, for several hours that morning, up and down washes and around. And I think we even saw something that looked like maybe some sign.
Yep.
And could not connect to those. But he had seen them a bit earlier in the season, back when they were dove hunting. So, maybe they've moved on, or maybe they're getting pressure. Who knows? We headed on to our next point and pulled up to the last point. And you were like, there's no way there's going to be birds in
this. Yep. It was a few grass patches here and there intermingled with, I guess it was mesquite or some black bush or something like that. Some
head high brush with dirt underneath it.
That's a good way to put it. Dirt and rock. Yep.
And it wasn't a huge area. Nope. It was kind of sitting between, what was it, like a pecan orchard?
Yeah, something
and
like that.
Some other agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
A little weird in-holding BLM lands, and he said, there's birds here. So, well, if they're here, there's not far for them to be able to go and us be able to hunt them. So we just basically worked a circle.
Yep.
We could see where, I'm assuming the gentleman who had given us the point, somebody had been there before, tracks were around, and we hunted, and we were giving up on that one when I think you stopped looking to see where the dogs were.
Yep, I'd stop looking at Onyx or doing something, seeing what time it was, and one, you know, nice male flushed out from under my feet.
A tiny little patch of grass.
Yep, just out of nowhere, in a little clump of grass.
At this point, we had all three dogs back out. This is the last day. Everybody's going to get to run before we have to sit in the car for 2 days. I had, I think, one of the dogs with me, one or two of the dogs with you. We were split up a little bit, and I hear you holler about a bird and see it take off, and then the dogs start picking up just singles.
Just singles.
Just scattered. And just kind of like we've heard people before, that they'll run along and scatter off and just hit cover along the way. And then once you flush the first one, you circle back around and find those singles. That's kind of, I guess that's what we had done, is because the dogs did get birdie a few times.
Yeah. Either somebody was there earlier. You know, we saw, like you said, there was tracks, and I don't know how old they were or weren't, but, you know, either somebody had been in there and busted them, or or we had busted them somehow and didn't realize it.
Yep. Or we had been trailing in behind them with the dogs, and they had just been peeling off. And once the dogs see the first one flush, then, this is what we're doing.
Yep.
So they were able to pin a few, flush out. You got the first one?
Yep, I got the first band appointed male. And I mean, once they, I will say, even those little clumps of grass, once they broke up and you had singles, they held as tight as any pen raised bob white we've ever hunted. I mean, it was amazing.
Crazy. Yeah.
You had to almost kick them up out of the grass.
Yeah, people talking about Murns holding tight.
Yeah.
We didn't experience that.
No.
They would usually flush out from under our feet or ahead of us a little ways.
They were ahead that year. Yeah.
Yeah. But even this year, they held well, but they bumped up before I even stepped on them. Gambles? No.
Yeah, you had to stomp all. How tight those birds held.
It was worse than woodcock.
Yep. And
so you got that one. Then we flushed a few back around. We wound up flushing some ahead of us so we could flush them back away from the road.
Yep.
And get decent shots at them. And then I shot a bird.
Yep.
We watched it go down. And I think another one got up somewhere.
Yep.
And we had marked my bird. Looked to see if we could see this one that landed somewhere nearby real quick, and then couldn't find my bird.
Yep.
And hunted and hunted and hunted until we finally found.
Until we finally found it.
The last bird. Yep. So it was basically the last hour of the last day.
Yep, pretty much.
We finished our slam.
It was down the fourth quarter.
Yep. The dogs were totally exhausted.
Yep.
We were exhausted, but everybody was just excited.
Yep.
Dash, our old dog, she went, as we went back to the truck, she just laid in the ditch and looked up at us like, I'm done. This is it.
Yeah, they were wore out.
Going no further.
Yeah.
We had to pick her up.
They were wore out.
So exciting. Then it was 2 days of driving back home, but it was a great trip. Lots of fun.
Yeah, so we got the slam. We were both super excited. You know, it was a really good trip. It was not the number of birds we thought. You know, we didn't push a lot of cubbies. We're hoping to push, you know, 4 or 5 cubbies a day, or at least 3 or 4 cubbies a day, you know.
Yeah, we had done that with Merns the few years
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I mean, we were all in the Merns at that time, but, you know, it didn't work out. But it was a really good learning experience. We saw a lot of good dog work. And the dogs worked well, and saw a lot of different habitats, and they adjusted to those habitats, which was good.
Yeah,
I like to see that. You know, hunting different species in different areas, because we hunted, you know, hills, we hunted grassy plains, we hunted cacti, true desert type areas, rocky areas, and everything in between. And the dogs adjusted really, really, really well, by what I could tell. But yeah, it's, you know, and people say it's more about the dogs and watching dogs, and they're right. But you know, you do want to see your dog point birds,
yeah.
Or if not, we're just a walk in the park. You know, one wise person once said that, you know, without the chance of a kill, there is no hunt. And I think there's a lot of merit to that. That you go, you know, because it's, you know, you get beat down. It's fun watching a dog, but when the dogs are just running, then you wear yourself down. You want to see some dog point and have that anticipation of the flush, you know.
Yeah.
That's what never gets old, is that flush. Every flush is different.
Right. Whether or not I connect with something or not, even though the dogs, you know, after a few times of missing, they're looking at you like, what the heck? Hand me that gun and let me show this is done. But,
And the dogs wear out. You can see them. They get tired of just running and not finding things, and not, you know, it wears on them too. So,
exactly. So again, we all got energized from that. We learned a lot more this time. So if we do Arizona again, we'll probably try a new area and try some different tactics. But definitely was a trip worth doing again at some point. We checked off 2 more species. We've done Merns in the past, so. That was 2 more species off our list this time.
Yep, absolutely.
And so now we're up to Bob Whites, Gambles, Scaled, Merns, Woodcock, a grouse, and a snipe. The grouse and the 2, the Scaled and Gambles, were new species. Came back, got to do a little more Bob White hunting. Still had some decent weather. But we did notice this year, late season hunting for Bob Whites in our area was a little bit different than what we normally see. Cover always gets a little thinner later in the season, but this year I think it was really thin and birds ran a lot.
Yep.
And that was something that the dogs had to learn. The younger dogs, our older dog, she's really good at kind of trailing or repositioning when birds are running, but the younger dogs were kind of trying to figure that out this year, and they ran and ran a lot. You could see them, and sometimes in the cover, running up ahead of you like little roadrunners.
They look like what you see with Gambles instead of Bob Whites.
Yeah. So it was a lot different, but still, we were successful. Found some new sites. Tried a couple of new areas. Not always successful in new areas, new properties, but did get to see some new habitat, and got a lot of dog work out there. We even got to go on a pheasant shoot. So. Shot a pheasant. We've shot pheasants before. Even though it was a pan bird, something a little bit different than we don't normally do. So overall, it was a very interesting season.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was. And you know, like you said, we had a lot cooler weather this year. We had a lot of sub freezing type temperatures, or a lot of low temperatures in at least the mid-30s. You know, for us, which is kind of unusual. You know, sometimes we can hunt in t-shirts.
Yeah, exactly.
It was towards the end of February before I ever.
Yeah, normally there's days when I'll put a t-shirt on under a shirt and through the day start shedding layers, but didn't have to do that much this year. And like I said, just the last day or two.
Right, yeah, we had a lot of really nice weather, a little perfect weather.
And good moisture,
we did. Sometimes we didn't have the breeze.
Right.
I've always said I would rather hunt in too much wind than not enough wind. Those just still calm days are tough.
Yeah. So last year the issue was super dry,
yep.
Warm days, scenic conditions were horrendous. But this year, Sitting conditions were normally pretty good, except for those really still days made it hard.
That's right.
Those were usually the days when they'd bust a covey here and there because they just got a little too close and that thin cover birds were not holding.
No.
Late season.
No, the birds, they did not hold well at all this year.
But again, we had the young puppy. Lola got on several points, especially towards the end. She wanted to step on her own.
Yeah, towards the end, she turned into a rock star. I mean, she's jam up. She ranges good. She doesn't range too far. She ranges, you know, far enough. She's out on her own. She's actively hunting. She's not just following other dogs around. She found, go back and look. Let's see. Got my handy-dandy journal right here. And we'll see, because we kept a tally. I offered them a steak dinner to whoever won. She pointed six coveys, or pinned six coveys on her own. She busted some others, you know, that's what they do. Yeah. But she pinned six on her own and found two woodcock for us this year. two woodcock. So yeah, she came on really nice. She'll have a really good season next year. She'll be ready to go.
Well, that's exciting. Looking forward again to next year, seeing her really come on and seeing our male really. He was really great this year. Really good form. So hopefully Dash will have a few more years. She's our older dog. And at least a few half days here and there as she ages out. But she's still moving on with good speed. The young dogs sometimes out hunt her because they get there before she does. But she's going to find anything that they miss.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they gobble up all the low-hanging fruit. That's for sure.
Again, had a great year with some new species, new areas, and planning again already for next year and what we want to attempt, where we want to go. Hopefully have some good weather, start watching rainfall in some areas to see if we can get back out west to try a few new species and mark those off. So what kind of wrapping things up a little bit. So what do you think you learned this season?
Oh, I think the main thing is to shoot when you see birds. I mean, when you flush birds, that's what we learned. Yeah, I think a lot of it's just the biggest thing was you need to learn to adapt. I think you're the one that's always said it, that quail don't read the book, you know, or they're reading a different book or whatever the quote may be. But they, you know, and they don't. You think you've got great cover, great food in one area and what looks like up an area, and they're down the bottom, near the creek bottom. I mean, you find them sometimes. So it's just totally different habitat. And that seemed to hold true with some of the Arizona quail this year, you know, with gambles. You see those out in those open areas and flat, deserty type areas. And some of the ones, you know, the few we were finding, a lot of them were up on the hillsides, up in the, you know, the timber. So go figure. So, yeah, I don't, you know, and I think you need to learn to adapt to that and try different spots, try different things. Sometimes it's hard to just get in a rut and go to your same old spots where, you know, where it's producing. Get out and look at some different cover. Try some different properties. You know, get out. Try some different areas.
Yeah, when you're finding birds and you know you've got a covey there, it's hard when you've got limited days, limited time to not go to those spots where you know you have a good chance of being productive.
That's right. And we tried this year to go to some of those spots at least for a little while and, you know, get dogs on, have some fun, and then we tried to branch out and find some different areas. And it worked. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it worked great. Sometimes it didn't work at all. And you know, hunting pressure this year has done some of that. It's pushed us into some new spots and to find new areas. So that's actually been a good thing. We've learned a lot. You've had to branch out and try some different areas. Yep. It's just because of hunting pressure.
Right. I guess if there's a positive to a lot more people in the field, it pushes you to try some new stuff.
That's right. Try some new stuff. And you know, one of the other things I learned it was really neat is really good bird dogs can adapt to any type of terrain, any type of conditions, any type of upland bird, from what we can tell. It's amazing watching those dogs and how well they can adapt to different areas. We hunted from the piney woods, South Georgia, to Arizona.
Right.
And it's amazing. And different species, four different species in there that we did. So that's impressive. The way they can handle those.
Well, six if you count woodcock at night.
Yeah, you got those two in different areas, and they handle conditions from birds running, birds not running, tough scenting conditions, wind, no wind, everything in between. But it's just amazing how they learn to handle the different terrain, mountains, valleys. They learn to handle that. That's really impressive watching a dog learn to do that and how they can adjust to that.
Yeah. One thing that was been interesting to me is we've added, you know, dogs to the pack is how different each one of them are, even though they're all somewhat related. And we've got two dogs who are closer hunting, I guess. They're not real close hunting, but they check in a little bit differently. They hunt a little more methodically.
Yes.
And then we've got the other two who are a lot bigger running dogs.
Right.
And they just, they're out there wide open.
Yep.
And it's just, I'm going to blow by until I smell something and
yep.
then we'll lock in and get a little more focused
right.
on it.
As you called them, they were runners and rooters.
That's
so,
right.
So we have two runners and two rooters.
We do. But they're all good at, you know, different things. And I think we've learned to kind of pair them up. So you've got working their skills together and pretty successful in that. Exciting to see how things come together next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And some people would disagree, but the bigger running dog is going to gobble up the low hanging fruit. They just are. That's, you know, they're going to get there first. But the other dog, and so you say, well, they're not anything left. But you'd be amazed how many times I wouldn't say slower, more methodical, I guess is the word. Mm-hmm. The methodical dog that's really picking the cover apart is gonna find some birds that the big dog ranged out and went left instead of right or got the wind wrong and missed. So,
right.
Yeah, all dogs miss birds. I think that's just a fact. We need to, you know, as hunters need to realize.
Oh, yeah. Well, the studies show, and they've done the research is with radio telemetry birds is that even the best bird dogs miss
right.
50% of the birds.
And we all have the best bird dog.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. And we're not even talking breeds here, you know. There's setters and pointers and the Brittany's and everything in between. There's good dogs in all of them, but all dogs miss birds.
That's right.
And that's just something you got to realize.
Right. What was your most memorable moment?
Oh, I don't know. There's a couple. Geez, I guess I could rank them. Let's start with number three. I'll give you three. Number three was our young dog, the Lola. And she pointed her. I think you were out somewhere meeting or something that day, and I was hunting. And we got on some quail, and she nailed them. She pointed her first covey that day. And the other dogs honored, which was really impressive, too. It was great. I missed all of them. She went and pointed a single for me. I missed it, too. But yeah, that was cool just to see her when it really kind of, you can tell when it flips, that light switch goes off and it flips trigger or whatever, something happens up there. And now you've got a hunting dog. We went from having a, you know, a little rat running around or whatever to now you've got a hunting dog. Now
wide
she's actively seeking.
Little velociraptor.
Yeah. Yeah. She's on it now. She did really well. She didn't bump many. She didn't bump many. She was on them. Let's see. So number two, I'm going to say number two was that scaly cubby that, you know, we'd been out there for just a couple hours our first day and not even where we wanted to be in Arizona yet. We had spent the night just like, okay, everybody's got to get out of the car. We're driving each other crazy. We got to get out. They got to run. We got to walk. Everybody's got to burn energy. And we, you know, the promise when the middle dogs pointed that cubby had a good point. She was solid. We walked up and watched the birds fly off and across the other side. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. We found them, you know, on our own, did it ourselves, found them right there, right out of the truck, and just kind of watched them. And it was kind of neat just to be able to see. And you could, like I said, you could see them in the sun, just that color in them, that pattern just shining in the sun. You know what it was immediately. And we just kind of looked at each other. And that was pretty cool. But I think if I had to pick the number one, I guess, it was my memory I will take away from it. And I'll never forget, I wish I had on video, was when you shot the Mern, that one Mern you shot, the big stud of a male. And he wasn't, you know, he was wounded. He was hit pretty hard, but he just, I don't know, he absorbed it well or something and went down. And I could tell he wasn't just totally folded. And we went up there, and the dogs went after, and it was Promise again, the solid black one. And there was a cliff, and I'm calling it cliff because it was a cliff. And it was that scree on it. And he went and ran, and he was too close to shoot, but it just destroyed him. And then we hit dogs because she was on him, you know, when he took off. And it's kind of like the guys, like you see chucker hunting, the bird went down the cliff, and she went off the cliff with him. And I don't know that she ran down the cliff. She kind of, it was a controlled fall or slide or something. I thought she was going to break a leg, and we were going to be toting dog out. But she ran down, grabbed that bird down there at the bottom, chased him around for a minute in the bottom of that wash, grabbed him. Came back up. That took some doing, too. She came back up and delivered it to hand. I mean, that was that was pretty impressive.
Yep.
That was some solid dog work. She wanted that bird.
She was determined. That was the first bird we shot of the trip, and they were so excited.
Yep.
And she had, I think, 2 minutes out of the truck, she had got on scent from them
yep.
and got birdie. So
yeah, we had practically parked on the covey right up there. That didn't always happen like that. So yep. Yeah, those that was definitely number one, I think. And that was kind of the top three real good moments. I mean, there's a lot of great moments. I mean, like I say, every flush is different. And if it's, you know, you walk up to and you know there's going to be birds and there's a covey and you tell yourself, slow down, pick out a bird, take your time, you got time, and then you still mess it up because you get excited. Yep. And if that ever goes away, then we're just going to quit quail hunting and move on because it's, even all, after all this time, it's still just, you know, the flush and the flurry of wings, and it's still just, you know, super exciting no matter how often you do it.
Yep, even if you miss.
Oh, yeah.
It's all exciting.
That's all right. It's still good. So what about you? What were, I mean, is that...
Yeah, the MERS, that one, I promise, was definitely a very memorable moment. And then, you know, that last moment where the last hour of the last day when we get the slam and the dogs are just amped up.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got all three birds and, you know, the sun's setting kind of behind us and we're loading up the trucks and they're all just still just, you know, excited. Right. And that was definitely a great moment. But, and to me too, even without the dogs, the hunting the grouse.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty awesome. We had flushed a few. I flat missed one through the trees. I killed a tree or two on that one. And I think the first one I shot at, then hit this one, nailed him with the, you know, the mountains behind us.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing views sitting up there on top of the world. And that was a pretty memorable moment too. Just enjoying the nature and the walk through and actually getting to harvest a bird in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So great year. Again, like I said, it's probably one of the better years overall as far as number of species and opportunities that we've had in a while, and looking forward again to next year.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the thoughts next year?
I don't know. It's whichever direction you want to go.
Depending on when the rainfall comes in and
see what's going on. See what the, you know, you got to let the weather dictate that's for sure with these bird numbers.
Yep. So something we'd wanted to do, rainfall hasn't allowed us to really get on prairie chickens. That's on my list, and I really want to get out and hit prairie chickens and maybe some grouse.
Yeah, we'd love to do some grouse, you know, some prairie grouse or a sage grouse at some point. I'd like to just see a sage grouse and see one of those.
So maybe things will work out this year and we can do another nice end of season wrap up next year with some good success and a few more species on the list.
Absolutely. Yeah, maybe so. And, you know, that's something we talked about before, too, was especially the MERS and some of these birds that are in such limited areas that you realize how much we don't know about those species in some of these areas and the hunting pressure that's really came on the last five years, somewhere in there. You know, one time we thought the oceans weren't depletable either, and we didn't deplete them. So it's something to really, really think about as conservationists. There's more people in the sport. It's growing. We have a limited number of resources, limited area, limited number of birds. So we're going to have to really, I encourage all our game agencies to really, really take a look at that and look into that and really, you know, make sure we're managing these birds properly.
Yeah. We talked numerous times about limits on some birds being a little too liberal, especially with out west. We see it with MERS, especially because there's a lot of guides who are guiding.
Right.
And so they go back to the same covey and over. They have, you know, their coveys marked out. They're going to target all these birds. And these guys are, you know, you see the photos of the tailgate full of birds and multiple limits. And for us, it was never about getting a limit.
Right.
It was experience in each of those species. If we'd have come home and not harvested a gambles, it still would have been a successful hunt.
Absolutely.
That was just icing on the cake, getting to experience that. So I guess as conservationists, we like to see others kind of have the same mindset, and we knowing that they don't all think the same way that we do. So again, like you said, encouraging agencies
to really be proactive in this. You know, it's coming, and there's more people. There's just no doubt about it. And with that comes more pressure. There comes, you know, even if you got just more guys and they're shooting just a handful of birds or half the birds, you're still killing the total concept is there. So I would rather, personally, just this is just me, I would rather see bag limits go down if they need to.
Yep.
So MERS are, what, 8 now or something? Especially in our game regulations need to be more dynamic or more fluid. and that these bad years, and we know how to predict some of that now when they're coming. We need to be able to change that before the season and lower those bag limits, or if we need to, in down years or whatever. And, you know, I'd rather see, instead of saying kill 8 Merns, we kill 4. I mean, we didn't need to kill 4. I felt good. You kill 2, 3. I mean,
you're not going out to, you know, make a meal.
Right.
You're not trying to feed yourself. You know, we shot 2 birds. We were happy. We went.
That's right.
We went on.
We didn't mess with another covey above Merns. No. We could have. We had marks. We had points.
But like we knew that Merns were struggling that year or this year.
Right.
And didn't want to put any pressure on them any more than we had to. We had planned to really not even go shoot Merns unless it was just last minute.
Yeah, unless we just had time and wanted to go see the habitat. It's neat. It's different. Yeah. You know, totally different habitat. Totally different area. But
we had done it. And
the only reason we did it is because we were there and we were struggling with everything else, you said. And we needed to win. The dogs need to win.
Right.
So we went down and shot that one covey, found that one covey.
Right. I encourage everybody to get out, try new things, new species, new areas, whatever it is. We hunted with some people we've not hunted with in the past. So made some new friends.
We made some good friends along the way. Yep. That's a lot of it too. Yep. Across the country as you go, we make new friends and
share some experiences. And again, looking forward to doing it all again next year. So hope you enjoyed our summary, our wrap up of our season this year, and look forward to doing it again another time.
As always, please subscribe and like, and join us on Facebook at Wildlife Her. Thank you.